I've talked a number of times about Pema Chodron talking about how we need to go inside and find those things that cause us to shut down emotionally and stay with them and not shut down emotionally when we come to them. This is our personal practice. It's different for each of us. And we go a little deeper and we find something. Maybe we peel that layer away. We go deeper. We find something else. It's like peeling an onion. And this is something that we do gently. This is something we don't do all at once if it's too much. And this is something we can get help with from a teacher or someone else. But as we go inside, we also find sometimes that really the wonderful things in our life, the things that make us the most happy, are also things that can aid us in the path. It's not always the difficult things. And that's something I'd like to talk about today. And it's going to take me a while to get there, but I will get there. So, it's spring. It's a beautiful time of year. The lilacs are out. I've temporarily lost my sitting place at home. I sit on an upper deck facing our backyard, and a robin has built a nest there where I sit, just a few feet from where I sit, so I'm going to give her some space. So I'm sitting on the lower deck for a few weeks now. So spring is beautiful. Another thing that happens in spring is that people start to play baseball. And every year I think about, you know, someday I'm going to do a Dharma talk about baseball. And I'm finally doing it. It's a good time to talk about baseball because we've got this new stadium that the Twins have built, which I've heard so much about. Has anybody been to the new stadium yet for a game? Yes, this section. We've got this. The baseball fans are all concentrated in this section. So, yeah. Is it nice? Is it nice? I hear it's nice. At work, that's all I hear about is people talking about this new stadium, and it seems like they've all been there, except me. I haven't been there yet either, but I am going. I have tickets for all three of the Yankee games in May, so I'm pretty excited about that. So. And the Twins are doing great, right? They have the third best record in baseball. They're on top of the Central Division in the American League. Morneau is hitting 350 as of today. Maurer is hitting 345. They're doing great. So I thought a little bit about Zen in baseball, and I didn't survey the literature on it. I imagine there is some. But I did find this little thing that I remembered from Tricycle that I first read a few years ago, which I found down in our library. And I don't know how serious this is, but this speculates that there's some mystical connection between baseball and Buddhism due to the fact that Abner Doubleday, who was the inventor of baseball, was a member of the Theosophical Society and thus was familiar with Buddhism through his close friendship with Madame Blavatsky. Did you know about this? I didn't know about this. But he's best remembered for laying out baseball's diamond field in 1839 in Cooperstown, New York. And he filled this American game with mystical Buddhist numbers, 9. There are 9 innings, 9 players, and 9 yanas. 3 strikes, 3 jewels, 3 vehicles, and 4. 4 balls, 4 bases, 4 noble truths. And they say, even if you don't really believe that, one great mystery remains, the 108 stitches on the hardball. A baseball has 108 stitches. This is the total of 9 times 3 times 4, the same number of Buddhist prayer beads on a sacred mala, as well as the number used ritually and repeatedly throughout Buddhist cultures. So there you have it. So I'm going to talk about a few similarities and a few differences between Buddhism and baseball, between Zen and baseball. For one thing, both have a combination of group and individual effort. In baseball, right, it's a team sport. when you're out there in the field playing defense, you're acting as a team. But when you're batting, you're there as an individual. A little bit like Zen. We all do this together, right? It's a team effort. But you have this alone way of facing it. When you face the wall, you're all alone. There's a great respect for tradition. There's a great respect for past masters. We have our own heroes like, you know, Bodhidharma and all kinds of Zen people, and so does baseball. They have people like Babe Ruth, who transformed the game, or Lou Gehrig, who's known for his uprightness and honesty and commitment and dedication. And in baseball, we're able to compare past and present masters. We have statistics going back very, very far, back to 1900. And some things have changed in the game, but a lot of things haven't. And we can actually look at the statistics and compare those old masters to the new masters. And in Zen, we think about the old masters and what they did, and we think about their experience, and we read what they did, and we go, wow, that happened to me yesterday. I recognize that. I recognize the experience. And of course, we have a lot of ritual in both pursuits. You know, we have a lot of ritual here in Zen. In baseball, we have warm-ups before the game. We have the national anthem. Everybody, a lot of people have their own individual little rituals. You know, when they're up to bat, they'll be fooling with the Velcro on their gloves, you know. And you know their gloves don't, you know, get messed up between every swing. They just do that. It kind of helps them to come back to the moment. So, and they have spring training. We have spring practice period. And but we don't get rained out, except once at Hokkyoji.
Yeah.
Once at Hokkyoji, we really got rained out. We don't have winners and losers. We don't have major and minor leagues. At least I don't think we do, and we shouldn't. I mean, if you do really well here, you don't get called up to the San Francisco Zen Center. And if you do really badly, you don't get sent to some small town sitting group. We don't do that. We do go into extra innings sometimes. As in baseball, in our Zen practice, we often strike out. At your absolute best, you get a hit about only one-third of the time. A perfect game is very, very rare, but it does happen. And in both, the object is to get home. In Zen, the object is to get home to your true nature. In baseball, the object is to get around the bases and come home. But in baseball, you also start at home. And it's the same in Zen. There's no place to go. You're home already. You just don't realize it. There's no first base, second base, third base in Zen. We don't even need to swing the bat. We're fine. We're fine as we are. And in baseball, you need a coach. Same in Zen. Coaching is a great thing in baseball. I coached my son Dylan's team for several years, and I probably attended about 50 of his games or 75. I don't know, a lot of games. In baseball, as in Zen, you have to be persistent. You have to come back again and again. There's also a kind of a dark side of baseball and a dark side of Zen, which is kind of a history of exclusion. In Buddhism, there's a history of women's involvement in the Sangha. And originally, as many of us know, women were admitted into the Sangha because they insisted on it, and the Buddha was not originally going to do that. And sometimes there have been, you know, separate, particularly in Asia, separate practice for men and women. And I think that has really, really gotten a lot better. But there's a history of exclusion in baseball as well. Racial exclusion, and of course, oftentimes girls were not allowed to play. I have a good friend who cuts my hair, actually, and whenever she cuts my hair, we talk about baseball because she's a Yankee fan and she loves the Yankees. She's just nuts about baseball. And I asked her once, "Why do you love baseball so much?" And she said, "It's because I played when I was a little girl. I played with my brothers." And she said she was on a team. She played with all the boys, and she had to quit. They made her quit because she was a girl. And I could hear the pain in her voice, you know, and this happened maybe 20 years ago, and I could still hear the pain in her voice. So that was pretty sad. And I just bring that up to, because it's good to acknowledge these things so they don't keep happening. But what I'd really like to talk about is not so much being a fan of baseball, but playing it. Because that has a lot of meaning for me. That has a lot of meaning. And that's where I find my connection with Zen, the real connection with Zen. When I was little, I played with my brothers. My older brother, Lee, who was 7 years older than me, and my older brother, Jim, who was 2 years older than me. And we lived on a farm, and it was usually just the three of us. We played baseball all the time. Sometimes it seemed morning to night. We just loved to do that. Occasionally, we'd get our dad out there. Occasionally, we'd get to play with a neighbor. And, of course, at school, we would play with others during recess. But usually, it was just the three of us. And we could only afford one ball. So oftentimes we would, you know, if you hit the ball into the tall grass, you have to go look for it. And you can spend a lot of time doing that. One time we hit it into this thick alfalfa at a neighbor's place. It was about this tall. And it took us about 2 hours to find that ball. But you have to do that because that's all you have. And sometimes it would start coming apart. You would hit it, and eventually you'd knock the cover off. And then you'd keep playing with it anyway without a cover, and then that string would start to unravel and get littler and littler. You have to get more and more skillful to hit that thing. Until finally you just got the little rubber thing in the middle, and you're playing with that, and then you have to be really good. And then somehow my brother Jim would find a dollar, and he would go to town, and he'd get us another baseball. And I loved to do it, and I wasn't that good. I wasn't that good at all. I was really small. I was tiny. Once when I was going into, I think, sixth grade, someone asked me if I had started school yet. That's how small I was. And not very strong, not very fast, not entirely skilled, but I had a lot of dedication to it. I kept playing. It's a little bit like I lived in a house once where we had two dogs. We had an elderly schnauzer named Sydney, who was about this big, and we had a husky mix named Genghis Khan, who was about this big. And we had to always keep them apart, because if they ever got together in the same room, Sydney would attack Genghis Khan every single time. He didn't know how big he was, and he would always get messed up. And I think I was a little bit like that. I just kept coming back, and I thought, you know, I'm going to make the major league someday. It's going to happen. And it didn't really help that I had a cheap glove. I didn't have a very good baseball glove. It kind of, well, actually, I brought it. This is my glove. And it's been stored with a ball in it for years and years, so it's kind of got a nice pocket now. But back then, it kind of folded over like this. It didn't really make a good pocket, you know, and it's pretty small because my hands were small. And I would play at recess, usually in the outfield. That was my customary position. And when I was in the outfield, I tell you, the chances, if somebody hits a ball in the air, the chances of it winding up in this area and the glove closing on it and actually keeping it were very, very, very small. Very small. But somehow the chances of the ball hitting right about here and bouncing off and continuing about 100 feet behind me were very good. So that's what I tended to do. I'd run after it, and then I'd throw it in, and the guy would have been home for a long time, you know. But I loved doing it anyway. I played the outfield. And was quite a fan, of course. I'd watch baseball on TV. And I couldn't get my mom to come out and play with us, but she would watch these games with us, and she loved baseball, too. And My mom was the most tolerant person, very patient with me. It seemed like no matter what I did, it was okay with her, except for one thing. She couldn't stand that I was a Yankee fan. It was almost as if I had turned Republican or something. She was shocked. But what happened was in 1961, I was 7 years old, and that's the year that Roger Maris hit 61 home runs and broke Babe Ruth's record, and Mickey Mantle hit 54 home runs. And that was really cool. I was totally impressed with that. So I like the Yankees, and I've stuck with them all that time. I never went to a professional game. This was, you know, I lived in North Dakota, a long ways from any stadium, until I think it was in my late 20s when I finally went to a Major League Baseball game. My dad saw one Major League Baseball game in his life. During World War II, he was in New York, and he went to the Polo Grounds, and he saw the New York Giants play there. And he told me that he saw, during that game, he saw Mel Ott hit two home runs. And Mel Ott, I don't know, probably, you know, I don't know if anyone remembers him or knows about him. He's kind of an underrated player. He played for the New York Giants for 22 years, had a lifetime batting average of .304, hit 511 home runs.
He's
which
in the Hall of Fame.
That's right. Very good. Thanks, Arnie. Right. At that time, he had hit more home runs than anyone ever in the National League. He's now 23rd on the home run list. But I'll stop with that. I won't go into, you know, get off on statistics. There's something about statistics that's kind of this black hole, and I don't think it's really good for my Zen practice. So I'm just not going there. So, but as I said, I played with my brothers. My oldest brother, Lee, is, as we said in those days, is mentally retarded. Now you might say intellectually disabled. He was deprived of oxygen when he was born and had kind of a difficult time. There were a lot of things he couldn't do. He could play baseball, however. His speech wasn't very good. He'd usually, you know, he would say only one word at a time, and he could say a coherent word and tell you what he wanted, but he just didn't have the ability to put words together in a sequence. And his motor skills weren't very good. You know, it was hard for him. He couldn't ride a regular bike. He had a big tricycle that he rode. And his demeanor was very sweet, just very, very sweet and very, very gentle, just not a resistant bone in his body. You know, just a wonderful, sweet kid. But he could play baseball. He could catch a little, and he could throw pretty well, and he could hit. He could really hit. He was pretty strong. He could hit a lot better than I could, and he loved it. He'd always play as long as we did. He would never be the first to go in. And I brought his picture. This is my last prop today. I'm just going to pass this around. This was taken a few years ago, but it is my favorite picture of my brother. And I still play baseball with him. He's 63 now. I guess we're both getting up there. And he lives in a group home in Iowa, which is a really wonderful place. I think three other residents right now. Really good staff, not much turnover. Kind, sweet, wonderful people. They just love him. It's a very good situation for him. And there's still a lot of things that he can't do. Or things that are difficult for him. Putting on his seatbelt can take him a long time. You know, it can take him close to a minute to get his seatbelt buckled, but we always, you know, let him do it himself, and he gets it done. But he can still play baseball. And we play catch. I'll go down to see him, and we'll play catch for quite a long time. And you have to be skilled throwing to him. You know, you have to kind of throw it pretty close to his glove. You know, you can't be throwing him wild ones, but if you kind of get in the groove, he's going to catch most of them, and he's going to throw them back. And he can still hit. He's starting to spin a little bit. Now, after he swings, he kind of almost loses his balance. And so it's getting to the point where we're going to have somebody stand next to him to catch him in order to make this work. He's extremely shy, and he's a little bent over. But in those moments when we're playing baseball, he gets this big grin, and he's just completely happy, and it's very, very sweet. And I always thought of baseball as kind of a healing game. And I remember the last time I got my dad to play baseball. This was in Iowa, and this was maybe 14, 15 years ago. I got my dad out there, and he was having a lot of health problems at the time and not doing too well. I got my son Dylan out there, and he was maybe 10 years old at that time and pretty good at baseball. And Lee was out there. And we played for about an hour or so. And there were four of us, and that's great, because with four people, you can have, you have a pitcher, you have a catcher, you have the batter, and then you have the outfielder who plays the other six positions. And, you know, you could say there wasn't a lot of talent out on the field that day. But to me, it was perfect. I think that's the most perfect baseball game I ever played. It was just the sweetest thing. You know, it just didn't matter that, you know, I never made it to the major leagues. And maybe Dylan didn't really want to be there. And my dad was not, you know, feeling so well. And Lee was not a great player. But this was us, you know. This was us playing our game. And connected with the past and the future, you know. I'm connected with my dad and connected with Mel Ott and how my dad used to play when he was little and my son, all those games I played with him, you know. And my wife, Kathy, she was a baseball coach, too. Connected with all these little kids, connected with the future. It's like the whole universe was there. And I think most of us who love baseball love it because we played it, you know. We played it with the people we love the most. And it's an equal opportunity game. You don't have to be really huge to play it. You don't really need to be good. You'll always find somebody at your own skill level to play with. You just need to love being out there, you know. You love to play the game. And you do your best because you want to do your best for the people you're with, you know. And maybe it's not great, but within that context of that game, it is great. And when you play baseball, I think the thing I love about it is that when you play baseball, you just play baseball. You know, you're there. It's one of those activities which you really come to and just do without a whole lot of self-consciousness. You know, you don't think about what you're doing. You just do it. You get lost in the game, you know. I often give you an example. When I talk about mindfulness, I talk about washing the dishes, you know. Like, don't be so distracted. Just wash the dishes. Give it everything you have. Really pay attention to what you're doing. You know, you have to make an effort to do that. But with baseball, if you play it for long enough, you get into this groove where you're there and you're just playing it. You don't have to make yourself do it. It just happens. It just happens. So, before Lee lived in the group home, he lived in another place, and I'd go there and play catch with him. And we'd go outside under all these oak trees. In fact, that's where that picture was taken. And we'd play catch. And we'd start real close, you know, because we're not really warmed up yet. And then we would move further and further apart and keep throwing and really concentrate. And Lee would be really into that. He would really be paying attention, really concentrating on baseball. But sometimes he would stop and he would see something kind of off in the distance. And you could see he was looking at it. And he'd be watching something, and I'd just pause. And then after a while, he'd kind of, oh, yeah, I'm back in this game. And he'd come back to the game. And that sounds a little bit like being distracted, but really I think that is great concentration, because when he was looking off at this thing, he was completely losing himself. He was completely forgetting that he was even playing baseball. And he'd come back to the game. And then he would be completely concentrating on the ball again. And that actually taught me a lot. And I emulated that. And, you know, so he has a lot of problems in his life. You know, he has a lot of struggles. And he must have a little, you know, anxiety, because he's always just wanting to do the right thing, you know, to just do what's expected. And he doesn't always know what that is. And that is hard for him. But in those moments when he's playing baseball, he's completely out of himself, you know. He's completely free. There is none of that. There's none of that anxiety. There's no problem. He's just completely there. And, you know, I think anyone can do this. Anyone can do this. And I'm not sure how he developed that ability, you know, all of these years of being quiet, or maybe it's just something that comes with his disability, I don't know, but he was able to do this. But anyone can do this, you know. Anyone has moments of sitting or mindful activity when you're just not there, you know. In a way, you're just not there. It's not that your needing mind gets what it wants, gets what it always wanted. It's that the needing mind just stops needing, and it's just not there. And you're just there. You're just there. And it's quiet, and it's serene, and it's not what you imagine when you're thinking about, oh, if only I could give up all of this stuff, you know. It's so quiet, and it's so serene. And it happens now and then, and maybe you go for a retreat down at Hokyoji. Maybe you come out of the Zendo and you see the leaves on the trees and they're just shimmering. And when that happens, you may never be the same after you see something like that. So that's a little bit about forgetting yourself, about giving up thought about that. And I think that this is what Yogi Berra was talking about when he said, how can you think and hit at the same time? You're too focused, you're too in the moment to think, you're just there. Yogi Berra also said, in baseball, you don't know nothing. Kind of a Zen master, don't you think? I remember when I was a kid, we would have these evenings where we played baseball, and maybe some of you had the same kind of experience. Or maybe it wasn't baseball, maybe it was some other game. But it's summertime, and it stays light until 9:30, 10 o'clock, and you're out there playing. And maybe you've been playing baseball all day, and you're really in the groove, and you go out after dinner, and you play some more, and it starts to get dark, and you know that your time is limited. So you start to just really value everything that happens, every hit you make, you know, every catch you make, every throw. You just really enjoy it. And you become quiet. You stop talking because you don't want to interfere with what's going on because it's just too wonderful to distract yourself. And it seems like on those evenings, time kind of takes on this sort of infinite quality in a way. You're aware that it's going to end, but there's something about just being fully in every moment and fully enjoying it that you're sort of not aware of time. And you play until you absolutely can't see the ball anymore. And then you play a little more, and then you go in the house. And maybe that was my early Zen practice. I don't know. You've got to be persistent. You're so persistent, you play morning to night. You're so persistent, you look for the lost ball for 2 hours, and you play with a little tiny thing in the center of the ball. When you're alone, you throw pop flies to yourself. Sometimes when you're alone, you hit the ball, and you go get it, and you hit it again. You just keep at it. You just do it day after day. And then practice is like that. You have to just keep showing up. Just sit. Just focus. And we sit alone, and we can have pain and boredom, and it can be difficult, but it can also be great. It can also be great. And that grin breaks through. That grin breaks through, like it does with my brother Lee. Sometimes it does. Or maybe it's just a little smile. Maybe it's just this very quiet feeling. But it breaks through, and it's very peaceful. And the thing about it is, you know, our presence in the moment. There's no place to go. There's nothing we need to do. It's okay right now. And the thing about baseball is, I wanted to do this talk for so long because I remember those games I played as a child. And there's just something so beautiful about it, you know. I think back to those long, long evenings and how enjoyable they were, playing with my brothers, playing with my dad, watching those games with the whole family, playing at recess at school, playing with my son, all those games. And I think of that and I'm just filled with gratitude, you know. I'm filled with gratitude because it was fun. But mostly it's about family. You know, it's about playing. It's about playing with my family. And my first Zen teacher said that gratitude was one of the three foundation stones. It's one of the three things that you can cultivate before you sit that's going to help your sitting practice. And gratitude, I think, is that thing that I referred to in the beginning that you find inside that helps you, that these really pleasant memories and thoughts can lead to. Because in gratitude, the line between self and other disappears. Because gratitude has no needs. Gratitude is fully giving. Gratitude has no separation from anything else. Gratitude is just being here in the world right now and not needing anything else. And gratitude can accept freedom of mind, which is not easy. We talk about freedom of mind a lot. We all want freedom of mind. We're working on freedom of mind. But sometimes it seems like it's so hard to accept that, and I'm not sure why. You know, maybe we think we don't deserve it, or we can't attain it, or we can't possibly know how to do it. Or maybe it's selfish. It wouldn't be right for me to try to get freedom of mind. I'll help other people get freedom of mind. But really, if we're truly going to help other beings in the deepest way possible, which is having freedom of mind, we have got to get it. We have got to find that for ourselves. And we've got to accept it. And it's not getting it. It's not going out and getting it and finding it. It's accepting it. It's letting it be. It's letting the mind be quiet. It's letting whatever it is that is impeding us or holding us back, it's just letting that go. Just being here, just being okay with what is. So, gratitude for what we have, and being open to what's in the world, and being grateful for what we have out here, these leaves of the trees snapping in the spring wind, these oak trees right out here, these games we play with our kids, the time we spend with our kids, these memories we have, these sweet memories of our family, all that can help us. So, thank you. So, does anyone have any observations or questions or anything? Baseball statistics? Yes.
I had mentioned, I realized yesterday you were giving the Dharma talk. She said, I wonder if you've mentioned this to me. I wonder if it's going to be a Zen in baseball. she will have missed a good talk. I appreciate that. As a Yankee fan, we do appreciate the fact her grandfather played in 1927.
No kidding. What was his name?
His name is Don Miller.
Don Miller.
He was not a starter on the team.
Mm-hmm.
He came out of the University of Michigan as an All-American pitcher and drafted directly, or brought in directly to the team.
Wow.
And was injured in the offseason and never got to play.
Oh.
All sorts of pictures.
That's pretty cool. But he's there in the stats. You can look him up, I'm sure, and find out exactly what he did. In Cooperstown, really? Yeah, that's cool. Well, maybe you can... You have records of all that? Oh! His name was Don Miller. Remember the 1927 Yankees, which isn't that reputed to be maybe the best team ever? Yeah. Wow, that is so
except
cool.
Except for the 2010.
Yeah, yeah. They really are looking good, aren't they? Yeah, yeah. Okay, yes.
I want to thank you, Ted, And I remember you giving a talk describing building the crane elevators.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really appreciate those life experiences and images that you give us in those talks and the kind of that you present.
Well, I'm glad. I've noticed I enjoy, you know, I've heard many, many Dharma talks, and I enjoy talks that incorporate personal experience, and I think it's a good thing to do without, you know, tipping the balance too much. Thank you. Thank you.
And what are the other foundations besides gratitude, do you remember?
Oh, I was afraid someone would ask that. There's one I can't remember. One was just being here, just being present here, not needing to be anywhere else, some variation of that. And I am afraid I cannot remember what the third one is. So, yes?
As a Red Sox fan, it pains me.
Oh, no.
You hit a home run. I also mentioned there is a new book out. I haven't actually read it yet, but it's called Red Sox and Philosophy.
Red Sox and Philosophy. Oh, the comment for the people in the Founders Hall was that as a Red Sox fan, he said it pained him to admit that I hit a home run today, and said that there's a new book called
Red Sox and Philosophy.
Okay. Well, you know, I kind of like Boston. So, anything else? Yes.
I just got to mention I grew up a mile from Wrigley Field.
Ah.
Having experienced a great deal of joy in playing baseball, there's also been a great deal of anguish in watching baseball.
Yeah.
But I definitely identified with your story about playing in the night of baseball. Growing up in the inner city, we'd play on the schoolyard and hit the ball on top of our school.
Right, right. Yeah, my dad was a Cubs fan. You know, he grew up in Iowa, and most people from Iowa are either fans of the Cubs or the Cardinals. And yeah. Okay.